Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world, one of the all-time heroes of that war. Over generations, really, almost certainly decades, is our first guest, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, United States Army retired, a man who helped found and led, ultimately, our country's arguably premier Special Forces Unit, the Delta Force. He is deeply experienced in matters involving both the national security of the Defense Department stripe and of the intelligence stripe. And so it's a special privilege to have him with us to talk about, among other things, two of President Obama's nominations to be leaders of the national security portfolios. John Brennan at the CIA we'll come to in a moment, but I want to start with Chuck Hagel at the Defense Department. General Boykin, you were among those military officers who recently issued a letter expressing concern about this appointment. What is the source of that concern, and why do you think it should be dispositive to the Senate?
Well, Hagel has an abysmal track record of A, recognizing the existential threat of Iran and their emerging nuclear program. He has consistently been unwilling to support any kind of tough sanctions against Iran or even against, you know, their terrorist element, the IRGC, Iranian Republican Guards Corps. And he also, I believe, has demonstrated some rather anti-Semitic tendencies in not being willing to stand with Israel. So I'm very concerned that that's the best that we can do as a nation. If you look at his hearing, it was probably the worst showing for any nominee in my lifetime. So I'm very concerned.
I think rightly so. Let me ask you about one of the other nominations. As I mentioned, John Brennan. I imagine you crossed paths with him during your time in the United States government, including your service as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. What do you make of his, well, I think most charitably it's described as willful blindness about that threat, that enemy posed in the form of an existential threat, I think, not just to Israel, but I think to all of us in the form of Islamism?
Well, yeah, I'm very concerned about Brennan. In fact, I'm more concerned about Brennan than I am Hagel. I'm concerned about both of them. But Brennan's track record of not being willing to acknowledge that al-Qaeda is actually executing Islamic theology. It's motivated by fundamental Islamic theology. And Brennan is a guy who has, A, not been willing to acknowledge that this is what motivates them, but B, he has personally brought in a number of, I believe, very subversive elements and individuals into our government. He has helped to place them in positions of great influence within our government, to include in the White House. And, you know, Brennan has been very sympathetic to the jihadist cause, and at the same time refuses to acknowledge that jihad is just what the authorities of Islam say it is. It's a holy war against infidels, but he still continues to call this an internal struggle. And most problematic is the fact that he still refers to Israel as Palestine, and he refers to Jerusalem as Al-Quds, which is right out of the playbook of Islamic Jihad.
Yeah. General Boykin, you served for a time at the CIA. You, of course, worked in the field with the CIA. Given what you've just said, which is a pretty strong indictment of a guy who is, well, certainly subjecting himself and others, it would appear, to a kind of, well, again, putting it charitably, political correctness. Do you worry that that kind of approach, if adopted or imposed upon the Central Intelligence Agency, could greatly compound our difficulties in contending with these jihadists who are under no illusion that they're engaged in holy war?
Well, I think you've asked me a rhetorical question. Of course, I'm greatly concerned about that. Look, what we're sending them is a message that says that either. We are willfully blind and we don't recognize exactly what you're doing and what your intentions are for America, or that we're afraid of you and we're going to let you continue doing what you're doing because we're afraid of what you may do to us if we stand in opposition to you. Either way, we lose.
Yeah. General Boykin, moving along, because there's so much to cover with you, one of the things that I'm sure is on your mind as a longtime and highly, highly decorated warrior is what is being done to our military at the moment, both in terms of these sequestration cuts on top of all the previous ones, and most recently the decision by Leon Panetta on his way out the door to insist that women be put in frontline combat positions. If you could just quickly give us a sense of both, how you see them.
Well, first of all, remember that Bob Gates made significant cuts before he left and Leon Panetta came in. People seem to be forgetting that. And when you look at the details of what's occurring right now, you're going to see, for example, you're going to see an army that will no longer be able to train or repair its equipment because much of the cuts that the army will take will come out of what's called its operations and maintenance budget, which is going to be cut significantly, over 75% of the current O&M. So we're going to have a hollow military. We will not be able to keep sea lanes open. We will not be able to respond to crises. And we will certainly not be able to modernize our forces to ensure that we have a strategic edge based on, the best equipment and the most modern technology. With regards to women in the military, women are serving honorably. They have served honorably in combat positions because they've been in combat since 9/11, and many of them, over 150, have died, and many others have been wounded. The question is, should they be in infantry units, special forces, SEALs, armor, those types of units that are right on the front line, engaged directly with the enemy? And my answer to that is no, they should not. And there's a variety of reasons. And if you think this thing through and look at the second and third order effects of this, what you're ultimately talking about is registration for selective service. You're talking about placing women in positions where they are surrounded by men and where they become a distraction regardless of how capable they are. These units live in abysmal living conditions where there's no privacy for hygiene or other normal functions. And all you're doing is creating a burden on the commanders to figure out how they maintain some separation at a time when they are trying to keep their troops alive and trying to overtake an enemy that is bound and determined to destroy us. So I see a plethora of problems that no one has discussed and no one has really thought about.
Yeah, very worrying stuff indeed. This ultimately is, of course, the responsibility of the commander-in-chief. I know, General Boykin, you have been very, very concerned about the Benghazi affair and the cover-up that flowed from it. We've learned in the space of the past week about the president being missing in action as that attack on our diplomatic personnel and others was unfolding. What do you think of that, and what does it say to the troops?
Yeah, well, first of all, Frank, in a letter to Ulysses S. Grant on the 10th of March, 1864, William Tecumseh Sherman wrote something that said, "I knew wherever I was that you thought of me, and if I got in a tight spot, you would come if alive." Well, that's American ethos. That's a value. That value was usurped. That value was betrayed in the Benghazi event. The military needs to be taken to task. They need to bring Carter Ham, the commander of the Africa Command, to Washington to testify, to find out why he did not launch a military reaction, a military rescue, a military operation to try and, A, save these people, and if he could not save them, to bring their bodies home. This, we fought in Mogadishu, Somalia, in 1993 during Black Hawk Down, over two dead bodies, and we fought for 18 hours because no one was willing to leave a dead body of a fellow American behind. That ethos has been breached, and I think that somebody has to be held accountable for it, and the truth has yet to come out on what actually happened. Where was the president? Why was he sitting in the White House Situation Room on the night we killed Osama bin Laden, but he was not there the night that we were trying to save our diplomats in Benghazi.
Amen. Jerry Boykin, these are pregnant questions. We need them answered. We appreciate very much you posing them with us, and hopefully you'll be with us to see them answered as well. General Boykin is, of course, the author of Never Surrender, A Soldier's Journey to the Crossroads of Faith and Freedom, among other works. You can find more of Jerry Boykin at our website, securefreedom.org. General Boykin, thank you very much for joining us, as always, and for your great service to our country. Next up, we've got Seb Gorka. We'll talk with him about the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamism, and what it means for you.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.